This is Lee Davey at calvinair.com. I'm here at the Triton Poker Series Montenegro. I'm here with Selena Lynn. How is life?
Life's good. Just completed the EPP and there's the scoop online, so looking to put on some online hours when I can.
EPT Monte Carlo, right?
That's right.
How did it go?
Well, it's one of my favorite stops. It's always the stop that, if I was to pick any stop in Europe, that's the one I always go to. And I've had a lot of success in the past 3 years there. Mm-hmm. But this year, Randy, my boyfriend, has been doing extremely well. So this year, he's carried the team for us. He actually final tabled the national event, and I actually managed to final table one event and cash three in total. So it's a good trip overall.
You said Randy, my boyfriend, but it's of course
your fiance now. That's correct. I'm still not used to saying that. That's actually quite interesting because I think, like, as poker players, we're used to having that freedom, that carefree kind of mentality that when, you know, even when we're like, oh yeah, we're going to get married, let's set a date, we still have a set one here.
Right.
It's one of those things where you just kind of like push it back because we don't even know where we're going next week, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for like the main event, we're like, oh, do we go to Vienna to like finish up scoop? You know, then what happens after that? When do we go to WSOP? So it's like one of those things where you just never know what's on the agenda for you, like, you know, coming up.
It's like trying to get a poker player tied down for an interview. Like, I've been trying all day to get people for interviews. Like, you know, we're flexible. We'll do it whenever, you know, and I can imagine that marriages will be exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
How important was it? I mean, love is love, right? You meet someone, you fall in love, there's nothing you can do about it. It's biochemical, et cetera, et cetera. But how important was it to fall in love with somebody who understands poker?
I think that people would give you two very different take on that one. Mm-hmm. I think that some people would be like, don't date a poker player, right? And that applies to both men and women. But I think that there's some people that, like, you meet similar to, like, Randy and I, where we don't see ourselves as real poker players in some ways. So as we went through the journey of, you know, being poker players for 10 years, we never really looked at, you know, applying mathematical probability or EV or equity to like making certain decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think we based it a lot on whether or not this makes us happy. Mm-hmm. So I would say that we were able to survive as long as we have in this kind of community is because we've stayed very true to ourselves. Where we wanted to do something, we say yes. Where we did want to do something, we weren't comfortable with, we say no, you know. And that applied to, like, you know, hang out with friends. There's some people that you're like, oh, you know, I think that we'd connect on great level. Then you're like, okay, I'm happy to, you know, have a drink with you. But there's some people where you're like, oh, I don't think, you know, we would click, and you just simply say no, you know, sorry, like, I'm kind of busy.
What do you mean when you say we're not real poker players?
I would say that, like, all the friends that we hang out with and we make are people from walks of life where they actually have a normal job. Mm-hmm. So they're actually not real poker players, because poker players, to me, is because a lot of them that, you know, first of all, you start off when you're very young, and it kind of dictates what kind of personality you end up having as you've grown up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that as you guys probably would see, that majority of the recreational poker players, they didn't do this from the get-go. They started off as, you know, having a career, having a job, a businessman or something of that kind.
Yeah.
And then they got into poker. So they see it as very fun recreational kind of activity. And I love playing with players like that on the table.
Right.
You know, to me, poker is still supposed to be fun. You know, I actually have stopped wearing earphones. I love having a great conversation with people on the table. Mm-hmm. It was a little tough at EPT Monte Carlo because everybody spoke a lot of French. But the funny thing was, I actually did not know that you cannot speak French on the table for the past 3 years.
Oh,
I just found out this year.
It's supposed to be English only, even though it's in French.
Exactly, but because everybody's having fun, everybody, you know, I would never put up a fuss about it. I actually have never called clock for my entire career or anybody. It's just kind of, I want people to have fun, you know, and I enjoy that vibe. You know, when you go through hours of playing and people are having fun, time just flies. I don't realize I'm sitting on the table for 10 hours. But when you have people with headphones on, staring you down, calling clock, like, it really makes it feel like much more of that uncomfortable game,
yeah.
You know? And I see why, I guess, a lot of recreational players will be like, oh, that's not kind of the vibe I want. This is not the kind of game I want to play.
Yeah.
You know, it would be rather intimidating. But if you create like a much more friendly chit-chat type of, you know, because how we are on the table and how we are off the table, we're exactly the same.
We were just having dinner now, three of us, recreational poker players,
right.
And we were saying about... There can be a toxic side to it. You can play poker and you can leave feeling, that didn't feel good. And it can put you off it. And it can be a variety of different things, but yes. One of them is the seriousness of it, the anger. Sometimes yep. There's a lot of anger in there, misplaced anger. And
yes.
But upstairs right now, like, everyone is having so much fun.
Yeah, it's like a home game.
it literally is a home game. But yeah. I just said to Steve, why aren't you playing? And he's like... I think the stakes were a little bit too high to play short deck for the first time, but they are having a lot of fun. And I've always wanted to ask you this, actually. There's not one female poker player up there playing. And when it comes to those stakes, the highest stakes in the game, it's very few. I mean, I think Vanessa's the only woman who's ever played in the one drop, for example.
Right.
What's your thoughts on, apart from the obviousness of there is more men than women, mm-hmm. is there something else at play here that prevents the women getting there, do you think?
I do. I think that there's a part of our personality as we're growing up where we always wanted to seek out things that I would say are more stable.
Mm-hmm.
So when you offer a woman like the life of a poker player, which can be, you could have a long streak of losing month,
mm-hmm.
No, but you're meant to look at it long term. You look at it, you know, over a whole span of a year, you know, and so forth, even longer sometimes, right? Because especially if you're playing live, that span of a bad run can continue for a really long time because the amount of tournaments you're playing a year, you know, it's so different to playing online. Online, you could play like 20, you could shoot off 20 a day, but you mean maybe like, for example, I did EPT Monte Carlo, I played maybe 6 events.
Yeah.
You know, so that could last for like a good 3 series of tournaments, and that could span
several years.
Exactly, it could be 6 months, it could be a year for some people, you know, and it could be several years for others. And that can be really hard to swallow for a female, usually, who is always looking for stability. You know, we look for stability in family, we look for stability in relationships. We do not really like having that question mark unknown on the horizon.
Mm.
You know, I personally like to know where I'm going next. I like to plan early. And Randy's like, oh, don't worry, you know. He's like, yeah, so what if we pay, like, you know, extra... 50, 100 bucks here and there for a flight. But, you know, maybe that's easier for us because we'd have to cancel. You know, something's just come up.
Yeah.
So that's kind of his mentality. Oh, we'll just deal with it when it comes at you, kind of thing.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And then for girls, I think it's much more like, oh, we would like to know what's happening. We'd like to know the plan. We'd like to know, you know, each of the step of the way.
It was interesting because we were talking about this last night over dinner, and Liza, my wife, said that prior to having a baby, she was a carefree, let's go anywhere. And now she's had a baby, I need a base, I need a nest.
Yeah.
I need some stability, I need some security. So yeah, I can understand that completely.
Yeah.
Switching over a little bit, you are, what do they call you sometimes, the queen of poker in Asia.
Yeah.
It's having a bit of a bad beat, we'll say, in the press at the moment with the social poker apps being pulled, I think, on June 1st. What's your take on it all?
Well, the thing is, I feel like it's definitely a market that needs to be, you know, it needs to be kind of regulated in some way.
Mm.
And I think it's really coming down to how to go about doing that. I think that the problem right now is that we're getting cash game very much mixed in with MTT, multi-table tournaments. And, you know, the majority of players who push Texas Hold'em and the best players and, you know, the biggest names in poker in China are all multi-table tournament players. And they're like, well, no, you can't categorize them as the same. You know, you're going to see that over time, the tournament players are the ones with constant results. You're going to see them, you know, I mean, like David Peters, like there's so many names out there that even in main events, you're like, how do they do it?
You all know? The time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That consistency is something you just cannot ignore, you know. But the problem is that it's so new to the market that they're like, oh, well, we don't know what it is. If it involves, you know, anything to do with, I guess, you know, getting your money in the middle and going for a flip, it's got that feeling of possibly gambling. You know, the thing about poker is that if you actually played it, you know, you realize that, first of all, you don't actually need to be in a casino to play it. It's very different to all the other games like blackjack and baccarat. And all your decision making is not done after you put your money in. You know, every single hand is dependent on the individual that is playing, and that is really important. So you can literally have so many different variations of playing one particular hand that really dictates the outcome. And with baccarat and blackjack, that's not like that. It's essentially one or two decisions.
Yeah.
One or the other, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't have, it's a lot more like chess. But the problem is the fact that it's being played with chips, it's being usually held in casinos, it's gotten, I guess, the vibe of it being a much more of a casino type of game. You know, but if you went about it the mind sport kind of way, you know, that mentality of, you technically could record people's chip stack with just numbers on the side, with like a counter or something.
Like points.
You know, like points, exactly. You know, that's something that's possible. The other people's argument would be, well, these tournaments, if you call it a sport, then people should not have to pay money
themselves
to buy into these tournaments. But essentially now we're talking about in terms of sponsorship, you know, is big name brands going to start sponsoring? And, you know, in the past, in some China tours, Mercedes have, like, there have been big name brands that has sponsored tours, you know, to some extent. But, you know, how to get to a point where we can distinguish between the two. You know, there's going to be, I guess, points where you have to kind of like have someone come in and regulate in such a way where they're like, okay, it needs to qualify a certain, you know, these tick boxes.
It's really difficult. If they were upstairs right now watching Short Deck, they would just think it was gambling, wouldn't they?
And I have seen that there's a lot of pre-flop action.
The first hand, they were all in the first hand, and it was Jack 10 versus Ace King, and I was like, Jack 10? And then I realised that they're playing a different game.
Right.
But it is an issue, isn't it? Because pure poker, Texas Hold'em or whatever, as we know it, we know that it looks like it and it is a mind sport, or yes, it's gambling involved in it, but definitely over the long term, the best players are going to come out winners. But then to keep the recreational players happy, we do need to chuck some twos, threes, fours and fives out of deck every now and then, as we know. But then it's still another game that we're saying is poker. And I can imagine it's very complicated. It doesn't help as well, I guess, when, like, this scandal emerges in China, and people like yourself and Randy, Poker Stars, and anybody else, the WPT, who's out there now trying to improve the brand name,
yes,
and then boom, this happens because the laws are restricting people, so they go under and they circumvent the law. And this might set us back a little bit, maybe.
Yes, I think that, you know, this sets us back a bit, but at the same time, Poker Stars Live Macau has done amazing, live tournaments.
The last one was like what? Nearly 2,500 people.
And
plus, you keep winning them all. How many have you won? Like three or four or something?
Yeah, I've won a few trophies in Macau. I think I'm totally about 12 right now.
Why? Let me ask you this question then. Why is that? Because I see people consistently winning at the same places, and it shouldn't make sense.
Right.
But you can't ignore it.
No.
But why is it?
I can tell you very well as one of the most important reason why I do well in Macau is I remember the players I played with,
okay,
and I have history with them.
Right.
So I can actually think back to previous hands or what type of player this player is. So this now, like, is very much skill. You know, you have to have good memory. I can actually recall hands I played with a particular player 6-7 years ago, things like that, you know, and the kind of hands I've played with other players, you know. And I think that also as someone that's relatively self-aware, it's very important to kind of be like, I know what they think of me, how they see me, and how do I use that to my advantage. Because as a woman, I think that, you know, there's some ways where when I'm playing Macau, I sometimes go and think people don't know me, but they all do.
Yeah, I think they do.
And they all do. And everybody who's come from China, you know, you're just like, oh, maybe they don't know me. And I have to kind of think, you know what, at this point, let's just assume they all do know me and how I should play this hand out differently.
That patch on your arm kind of gives it away if they didn't know you.
It does give away. And if it didn't, people are going to start advertising for me. Like, some people will be like, oh, you know, do you come to Macau to play often? And then somebody else, oh, don't you know who she is?
Yeah, you know,
I get that a lot. The success of the live events in Macau really showcases, I think, how great of a team that was built there. You know, I remember back in the days, there was literally like 6-7 of us that was trying to put together a tour, you know. And you know, with EPTs, it was like, you know, you have like people of like 200, you know, employees kind of putting one together. But in Macau, you know, you can only have local dealers. You know, there's a lot of hurdles that we had to overcome.
Yeah, it's more complicated.
Yeah, and I mean, with Danny McDonald coming back onto PokerStars, like, I think that's great for EPT. That's great for the, you know, but he single-handedly, like, really built, like, the team and everybody, you know, that's still there. We came across, like, we were talking about, like, you know, all the chairs in the COD poker room?
Mm-hmm. I've never,
like,
been there. No.
Okay, well, there's like 200 of these chairs. Okay?
Right.
And they're kind of like IKEA type of chairs. Well, you know what? Like, Danny and Fred, everybody took off their suit jackets and they were in the garage at the casino at Grand Lisboa putting together each one of these chairs for the players.
Right.
Like, that's how much blood and sweat has gone into, you know, building
making it happen.
That poker room in Macau.
Yeah, people turn up, don't they? Yeah. It's like this one here today. I turned up yesterday and the place was like a bomb site. I'm like, what, are you serious? This is going to be a poker tournament?
Happen,
you ain't got time. And then you turn up and everything kind of works okay.
I mean, there's like so many behind the scenes stuff that we don't see. And you have a lot of players who only sees, I guess, how something should be presented, ignoring the process of it. No, having it all, right? A lot of people are much more like, oh, this is not up to specs, therefore
complaining.
Exactly.
What I like about what you just said then is it seems very obvious that you look at the poker community as a whole and see how important it all is, whereas someone else could just rock up to that room upstairs, sit down and complain that the chair's not comfortable.
Yeah, the chips aren't right.
I don't like these cards or something.
Yeah.
Two more questions and I'll leave you alone. I have upstairs sleeping an 18-month-old daughter, okay? So I want my daughter, obviously, to grow up to be a little bit like you, you know, to be a very powerful, respected, amazing woman who manages to thrive in a male-dominated environment. And I happen to think that, as her dad, I have a kind of a big part to play in that. What are the things that I should be doing with my daughter? What are the values? How should I be parenting her to give her the best chance in what is a very difficult world?
That's a really, really tough question because Rennie and I really want a daughter ourselves. You know, we think between having a son or a girl, like, or a daughter, we much prefer having a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually talked about this, whether it's, you know, do we ever teach them to play poker? Those are big questions because, you know, they're going to grow up going, oh, I mean, Google, come on, they're going to find out that the parents are
everybody wants to be like their mum and dad at some point
in their life. Or be introduced to what we did at
the
one point.
The lifestyle, yeah.
Exactly.
If you're still playing, you'll be bringing them to places like this.
Exactly, you know, seeing poker players, kind of that lifestyle, you know. I think that what people don't realise is that there is the glitz and glamour of, you know, beautiful places and everything, but that's very similar to social media. It is also putting forward the best, the most attractive, I guess, attractive picture of poker, you know.
Yeah.
But then what about the times where, you know, ever since last November, I actually almost won my fourth spady. I actually got heads up, pocket aces versus ace queen. And I had the guy covered for my fourth spady, and he managed to hit a gut shot straight on the river to end up winning the tournament. And ever since then, my aces have gone down, all in pre-flop situations, about 8 times in a row now.
Wow.
Okay, and when I have kings, I run into aces.
Right.
It's just been absolutely atrocious. And I have, in the last series, hit a set twice on the flop just to be resetted on the turn. And this is all in on the flop too.
Yeah.
So it's a brutal journey. And I think that surrounding yourself with the right people is by far the most important thing. Randy and I love doing escape rooms. Escape rooms, I find, is great for puzzle solving. It's great for, in terms of just playing games. So I think that as you're helping your kid grow up, I think what I actually, this is actually something that I recognize. I don't get along very much with other girls very often is that they're not as competitive as me.
Right.
And that's something that I see as a good and bad side. I have developed a very boyish, tomboy type of personality, very similar to all the women that play poker because we are very competitive.
Right.
Now, by being competitive, you question yourself, am I ever content? Am I ever happy? Because you're always trying to strive for more, better. You know, well, okay, I've reached the level I am at. I am at the envy of a lot of people, but do I want to maybe, you know, play with the big boys upstairs? Exactly,
yeah.
Right? You know, like, how do I get to the best I probably could as a poker player?
Yeah.
Like, that's a question you always ask yourself. And what do I need to give up in order to get there?
Mm.
What is the trade-off?
What's the sacrifice?
What is sacrifice? And that's something that I think everybody deals with. It's a very big kind of talk type of topic, you know. It's something that you think about, you know, is that going to make me happy? You know, what do I have to risk to do that? Do I have to find backing? You know, do I need to actually be at, you know, somebody else's mercy in order to play these big games? Because as a lot of people know, a lot of the players, they're backed by certain amount of players who, you know, have the power of the money to dictate, you know, where they go, what to do, what tournaments to play and choose. They don't so much have that freedom. And just the other day, I was talking to Randy, I was like, if you were to give up some of the freedom or whatever and actually have someone telling you what to do, right? Like, what does that mean? Like, then have you gone backwards as a poker player?
Mm.
Right? We've actually talked about things like that, you know? So what is that perfect level of financial freedom and not having to worry about money, but at the same time, you know, just being your own boss? Because that's
one of the attractions about being a poker player in the first place,
exactly.
And then somewhere along the line you lose it and you become some robot.
Precisely.
Traveling around the world, having to chuck in the hours to get yourself out of debt.
Yeah, that's very important. And my sister, who's 12 years younger than me, she's almost like a daughter to me.
Mm.
So as she was growing up, I would always teach her and probe her and just ask all these questions and see her answer. You know, and I ask her and my cousin, they're both the same age, what is your ideal dream job? And they both gave me the same exact answer. And it's something I think that is very common nowadays. They said they want to lie on a beach somewhere, be an Instagram model. And I was like...
You're like, oh no.
I was like, oh my God, I failed, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh no, you know. Because I think that, you know, especially this day and age, it is very, very easy to question yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's very... You see so many things that are photoshopped. You see so many things that are presented in such a perfect manner where you start going, oh my God, like, am I pretty enough? Am I skinny enough?
Yeah.
Am I tall enough? You know, thigh gaps. Whatever this new trend that people come up with. I can't even keep up with it. Like, apparently, you know, the further, like, the more thigh gap you have, the better.
Yeah.
And people compare.
Yeah.
You know, and these are the things that, like, really throw me for a loop, because even just, like, Liv, she recently just said, you know, if you spend 15 minutes a day doing your makeup, that's, like, a whole entire year in your lifetime, usually, for you to be spending just doing makeup.
Mm.
But what does it mean? Are you doing your makeup to make yourself feel better? Are you doing makeup for someone else? Like, what are you doing? What is the purpose of what it is that you're doing?
It's that question, isn't it? It's being astute enough to and aware enough to ask yourself that question and not just put on the makeup. I know we're using the makeup thing metaphorically here. I mean, that's one thing that I definitely want my daughter to grow up is because as kids, you're always asking why.
Yes.
I don't ever want to stop that.
Yes.
You know?
Always should be asking yourself why, and you always should be asking yourself, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing?
Mm.
Is this really where I want to be, and is this going to make me happy? And I find that, like, talking to people openly about these questions, because those are the questions that I feel like people do not talk to each other enough. People are much more likely to sit with each other and be like, oh, what's the weather like? You know, where have you been? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
They don't ask the big questions in life. Like, you know, I would say, like, you know, what do you want to do before you die?
Mm.
You know, what are these, like, bucket list things?
Mm.
You know, just like, if you could say something to, like, you know, your father, your mother, what would it be? You know, just those things that really makes you just stop and think. Because as our journey growing up, I felt like our parents all tried to do the best they can. And I think that, you know, I asked my dad this question recently. Do you regret having children? And his answer was very interesting, and he actually told me honestly, and I was totally not offended by it at all. He actually said that he really enjoyed the journey and the laughter and everything it brought him, but if he could choose again, he probably wouldn't, because he says that he feels sometimes helpless at how his children may turn out. And I think a lot of parents feel that way. A lot of parents feel like, I have so much to do with how my child grows up. But sometimes in hindsight, you actually can step back and go, you know what? Sometimes society, you know, sometimes social media, sometimes people they're friends with actually have a lot more to do with how your kid actually end up being. You've just done the best job you possibly can, give them the fundamentals that they need, and then everything else is almost out of your control, you know. And sometimes in my sister case, you know, there's some things that she's going through right now as a 24 year old that we want to interfere with, you know, whether it's like choosing boyfriends or things like that, or telling her maybe she should do this with her job and that, you know. And the question is, I ask her, is why do you feel this way, why do you do this? And if she gives me the correct answer, then I'm happy with that, and that's all that matters, you know. To me, I'm like, why do you not want to work for a private practice, because she's a physiotherapist,
right?
She goes, well, I want to do it because I want to, because right now she's working with older people in old age home. She actually likes the feeling of, I guess, helping people, you know, like helping these older people who their children do not visit very often, their grandchildren don't visit very often. So she's actually built good relationships with these older people in these old people homes that she feels like she actually contributes to their day-to-day life.
She's serving.
Exactly. And she's like, I'm happy and I'm content. So, you know what? When she gives me this answer, I don't want to push her anymore, because she gave me the right answer.
Yeah.
You know, if she told me, oh, I can't be bothered, well, then I'm like, no. Like, that's the wrong answer. That's not how you should be thinking. But if you give me the right answer, then it's okay.
It reminded me a little bit of my my son when he got into weightlifting, and he started to, you know, develop muscles and stuff at 16, 17. And he would post a picture on Instagram with his top off.
Yeah.
And I would say to him, why are you doing that? Are you doing that because you want to grow your personal brand as a young teenage
fitness freak?
Or are you doing it because you want to get external validation from people?
Yes.
Because those end up being two completely different conversations between parent and child of how you're going to give advice or not. I think, going back to what you said about parents, being a parent, I think, as human beings, we just don't seem very good at being compassionate with ourselves. And I definitely know, as a parent myself, I carry huge amounts of guilt and shame all the time. Even though I know I'm a fantastic father, I still carry so much shame and guilt that I could be doing better.
Yes.
And you said the right thing. We are always doing the best we can with what we've got.
Yeah. And I think that, talking about the whole compassion, you know, I think that people just do not put themselves enough in situations that they're uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
You always want to hang out with people who says the best things about you. You don't want to hang out with people that disagree with you. You don't want to hang out with people that may not think the same way as you do.
Yes.
Right? You always want to kind of be surrounded by yourself that, you know, people that agree with you, have the same hobbies, have the same likes. But by putting yourself in a situation where you're uncomfortable with, facing people who do not agree with you, who do not see the same perspective as you do, offers you another perspective where you can actually become compassionate over time.
Which for me kind of goes around full circle to my question I asked you about, like, how do you raise your children?
Yeah.
I'm currently day 30 in a 365 day challenge to face my fears every day. And I've noticed that one of the biggest issues I have, there's three, but one of the biggest issues I have is this path of least resistance, this reluctance to step out of your comfort zone and it's almost like it's biological, right? And then I traced it back to being a child, having rules in place that keep me safe.
Yeah.
And so if we can teach our kids, I guess,
to
not have those rules and to be a little bit more flexible and be a little more compassionate when they're younger, then I think they'll grow up to be Celine.
Well, it's extremely tough, because in your comfort zone makes you feel safe.
Yeah.
And feeling safe is something that I think as human beings we really try to seek out. You know, whether it's having a home, whether it's having your own bed, everything. You know, these things make you feel safe. When you start like stepping out of your comfort zone, you start feeling stress, anxiety, and all those things that you feel very negatively towards. And that's why usually people like to be in a comfort zone. That's sometimes applied to poker players who play above their role. You know, there's a lot of poker players who much prefer always playing around the same stakes because they're like, oh, if I bust a 1K tournament, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But if I bust a 10K consistently, well, that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of those things where there are guys that you see, you know, you have the big names out there who are really going for it. You know, they're like, I'm going to just make it, right? I'm going to go broke 10 times. But you know what? I'm going to just pick myself up and keep doing that. Well, not a lot of people have that ability to keep doing that, you know, because once you go broke in poker and you're having to pick yourself back up and do it over and over again, it's really, really tough. And especially in this particular poker environment where everybody has gotten so much better, the money that you make in poker does not come as easily as it used to, you know. So people do worry about that rainy day, you know, what happens, that rainy day fund, right? Mm-hmm. Things like that. So you're much less likely to take those risks. But I think that in terms of self-growth, those are the risks you could take. You know, the things that you weigh it up. I mean, like, if you say to somebody, like, scuba diving, I'm scared shitless of water. like, I think my biggest fear would be drowning. And I actually had this reoccurring dream when I was around 6 that, do you know there's the Bund in Shanghai? So Shanghai is my hometown.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's a ledge you can actually walk along. And it's very, very dark. And I would be 1 second on my dad's shoulder. And I remember this vividly because my dad used to carry me on his shoulder. Uh-huh. And I would see the fireworks. So I would be taller than everybody else, right? And then I would walk on the side of the Bund sometimes. But he would be holding me. Then one day, in my dreams, what would happen is I would fall into the water. And that darkness in the water just immersed you.
Right.
And that is so, so scary. And for me to, like, I just love the water. But I would do it in a pool. You know,
somewhere safe.
Exactly. But then the idea of scuba diving where you would panic and you would want to just quickly resurface really scares the crap out of me.
Yeah.
You know?
Sounds like it's something you need to do.
Yeah, it's something that I really want to overcome. You know? Same here.
I went last weekend. I went out for the weekend camping, and this community we was with, they busted out the sea kayaks.
Yeah.
And even though I knew there was no sharks, but I was, I had this thing about sharks. And I'm like, she said, do you want to go on a kayak? I said, no. And then I was like, oh, I have to because I'm afraid of it.
Yes.
That's what this year of fear has been really good at, you know. One last question, I'll let you go. How does poker make you feel?
I think that I can describe my journey with poker and my relationship with poker as both love and hate. I think all poker players go through it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you absolutely love it when you're running great, like everything you're doing seems to be the right decision. You're getting the maximum like chips out of, you know, out of each pot that you're playing. Nothing stands in your way. You're like invincible.
Yeah.
You feel invincible, right? And then you go through periods of time where you're just like questioning yourself, like, am I even good? Like, why is it that, like, I can't win, you know? And you just kind of like feel like, oh, I should be betting the river here, and you do bet, but instead you realize, oh shit, I'm just valuing myself because the opponent is always like way ahead, you know? They're always way ahead, and you're like, you're the one that's always the betting lead. Like, you're always like, what am I doing? You know, you're just always like, am I really looking at the game differently? Am I looking at it wrong? Like, and all that stuff. Like, you keep questioning yourself, especially at times where I would say you're tired. You know, I think that, like, sometimes where you play a really long online schedule at times, especially in a time zone.
Especially now, this month.
Yeah. And you get to a point sometimes in a tournament and you're like, you know what? I don't care how much money I'm going to win. I just want to go to bed.
Yeah.
And you get that feeling, you know, and you're just like, oh, what am I doing? You know? it's very much like that. And then, you know, I actually look at some of the places that poker has taken me. And I ask myself, would I have ever gone there if I did have poker in my life?
Would you ever have come to Montenegro?
I've never heard of it last week.
Yeah, look at it.
You know,
it
exactly. And it's so gorgeous. Like, I saw the sun setting. And it was so beautiful. And just, I guess, seeing different cultures and meeting different people, you know. Even, like, bad experiences like, you know, Budapest. Budapest, we've like changed 200 euros for like Belarusian.
Right.
And it was like 40 cents, you know.
Right, right.
Like, things like that. And it actually like helped me kind of go, well, you know what, Randy, if this old, well-dressed old man had to pull this stunt, then you know what, he probably needs the money more than we do.
I like that.
You know, he probably needs to feed his family, right? And especially when there's not a lot of tourists around during the winter periods, like, times could be tough. You know, just see it as like, just donate to charity.
I like that, a little bit of humility. Let's end there. Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, you just have to, with poker, with every aspect of life, just see the humor, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know? See the humor, be humble.
Exactly. And, you know, just hopefully my sister and my daughter, like, they're gonna just turn out good because I gave them the good fundamentals that they're able to continue on with life. And I've built good fundamentals when I first learned poker, and that's taken me as far as now. You know, my intuition and my instinct are not as good because I've always started off as an online player, right. But my fundamentals are good. And
so
because
your fundamentals in poker is like a metaphor for your fundamentals.
Yes,
I like it. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.